Today is Wednesday, November 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. The U.S. State Department responds to reports that U.N. workers are being detained in Ethiopia.
If confirmed, we would similarly condemn arrests of U.N. staff members based on ethnicity.
Poland warns tensions are heating up on the border with Belarus over thousands of migrants trying to cross into the EU.
No go to Poland. We are going to Germany. Germany is life. No Poland.
And a U.S. federal judge rejects former President Trump's request to block releasing records tied to the January insurrection. We'll have these stories and more next. Representatives to the United Nations Security Council say time is running out on finding a political solution to the Tigray conflict before Ethiopia descends into an all-out civil war. The warning comes as people in the Tigray region are suffering from critical food and fuel shortages due to a government blockade of humanitarian aid. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
In the capital of Ethiopia's northern Tigray region, Mekele, residents say all the fuel stations are closed, food supplies are running out, and food prices are now too high for most people to afford. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has declared a state of emergency as Tigray fighters are advancing south towards Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, taking control of two cities. State Department spokesperson Ned Price was asked Tuesday about reports that several United Nations staff members have been detained by the Ethiopian government. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
If confirmed, we would similarly condemn arrests of UN staff members based on ethnicity. We understand from reports, as you alluded to, that those arrested are Tigrayan. Ethiopian government security forces, security force harassment and detention on the basis of ethnicity is completely unacceptable. We equally condemn revenge attacks by militants associated with the Tigray People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, and we call on all parties to cease such activities and respect human rights and the rule of law.
Price said that U.S. Special Envoy Jeffrey Feltman remains at Addis Ababa, and he said the U.S. fully supports efforts by Olusegun Obasanjo, the African Union's High Representative for the Horn of Africa. Obasanjo told the UN Security Council Monday that there is a chance for a political solution, but the window is closing fast. Olusegun Obasanjo is the African Union's High Representative for the Horn of Africa. He spoke to a UN Security Council meeting.
All these leaders here in Addis Ababa and in the North agree individually that the difference between them are political and require political solution through dialogue. This, therefore, constitutes a window of opportunity.
On Monday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Ethiopia was one of the issues he discussed with Egypt's foreign minister. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The crisis in Ethiopia also puts the stability of the Horn of Africa at risk. We continue to engage with all parties to the conflict and with partners in the region to encourage peace negotiations without preconditions in pursuit of a ceasefire.
On Sunday, Pope Francis prayed that the peaceful path of dialogue may prevail in Ethiopia. Pope Francis.
I follow with concern the news coming from the Horn of Africa, in particular from Ethiopia, affected by a conflict that has been going on for more than a year and has caused numerous victims and a serious humanitarian crisis.
Price said Addis Ababa is calm at present and again called on Americans who wish to leave Ethiopia to take commercial flights out, saying the State Department will also provide repatriation loans where needed. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
United Nations correspondent Margaret Bashir has been following the developments in Ethiopia with a close eye on what UN diplomats are doing and saying about the conflict there. She tells me a UN official said on Tuesday it submitted a request to the Minister of Foreign Affairs to immediately release the detained personnel in the capital, Addis Ababa.
Well, as far as we know, Carol, they're still working to both get them released and get an explanation from the Ethiopian government about why they were detained in the first place, because no explanation has been given.
Is it your understanding that all of the detainees are of the Tigrayan ethnicity?
So that's something the United Nations really doesn't want to get dragged into right now. They say that these are UN staff, they're Ethiopian nationals. The UN doesn't like to get into issues of ethnicity because that is very sensitive, and it's very, you know, it has bad memories in a lot of places in the world when things get broken down along ethnic lines. And the UN really tries not to get drawn into those sort of situations. They simply say they need to be released, no matter what. And the spokesman did say, no matter what ethnicity is on their identity card.
Is there any move afoot right now, as far as you know, in the talks that are going on in New York and elsewhere to do more than, you know, request their release and make sure that the dialogue progresses between the different forces in Ethiopia?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the UN, that's their goal, to make sure there are inclusive political talks to end this military escalation that is frankly scaring everybody at the United Nations, because, you know, this is the second biggest country in Africa. There's more than 100 million people in Ethiopia. The UN political chief said on Monday that it's a real possibility this country could slip into a civil war. This is the last thing the United Nations wants to see. There are already 20 million people across Ethiopia who need humanitarian assistance. You know, we've been hearing a lot about the situation in northern Ethiopia, particularly in Tigray, where there are 5.2 million people who need food and other medical assistance and other forms of humanitarian aid. There's another 2 million people in the neighboring regions of Amhara and Afar who need assistance because of the fighting. But 20 million overall in the whole country because of drought, because of locusts, because of climate change. So the UN can't financially afford another humanitarian crisis to escalate, and they can't, they don't want to see human suffering. So it's all hands on deck to try and get a political solution to this. They're working very hard with the African Union. The African Union is in the lead here. We heard Monday from former Nigerian President Obasanjo. He's the high representative for the Horn of Africa for the African Union. And he's still in the region talking to people. And he says a political solution is possible, but the window is closing.
That was UN correspondent Margaret Bashir. She was speaking to me Wednesday from UN headquarters in New York. Poland has warned of a possible armed escalation on its border with Belarus as thousands of migrants attempt to cross the frontier into the European Union. Europe accuses Belarus of directing the migrants toward the border as part of a campaign of hybrid warfare. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
Using shovels and bolt cutters, migrants tried to break through the razor wire fence Tuesday that Poland has erected along its border with Belarus. Over 12,000 Polish troops have been deployed along the frontier. They responded with pepper spray and tear gas. The migrants are from Afghanistan, the Middle East and Africa, mostly young men, but also some women and children. Some spoke to Belarusian state television in footage that cannot be independently verified by VOA.
No go to Poland. We are going to Germany. Germany is life. No Poland.
Poland and the European Union accused Minsk of weaponizing migrants, inviting them to enter Belarus and then shepherding them to the border, sometimes by force. Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki spoke to border guards Tuesday. He said, "We know that this is a fully planned operation which aims to disrupt the sovereignty of our country. Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko's regime uses civilians as weapons of a hybrid war," he said. Belarus denies directing migrants towards the border and accuses Poland of taking up arms. President Alexander Lukashenko said Tuesday It's obvious that this is some sort of drill or intimidation. Of course, we will face it without any anxiety. The European Union says Belarus is retaliating for sanctions imposed in the wake of the brutal crackdown on pro-democracy protests following the disputed 2020 election, which Western observers say was rigged. Washington echoed Europe's concerns. State Department spokesperson Ned Price spoke to reporters Tuesday.
The United States strongly condemns the Lukashenko regime's political exploitation and coercion of vulnerable people and the regime's callous and inhumane facilitation of irregular migration flows across its borders.
Poland has enforced a state of emergency in the border region, blocking access to refugee support groups and journalists. Several migrants have already died at the border, and thousands are stranded in freezing temperatures. Belarus is forcing Europe into a moral crisis, says Polish analyst Piotr Burash. Polish analyst Piotr Burash of the European Council on Foreign Relations.
As Europeans, as human beings, we cannot ignore the tragedy of those people who got stuck between, on the one hand, the Belarusian border guards, who do not allow them even to go back to Minsk or to their home countries, even if they want to. The Belarusian border guards push those people against the Polish border, towards the Polish border, and threaten them and use force against them. And on the other side, on the Polish side, there are Polish border guards who do not let them in.
Humanitarian organizations say the actions of the Polish troops in forcing back legitimate asylum seekers breaks European and international law. Poland says its actions are legal. Despite strained relations with Warsaw, the EU said Tuesday Poland has its full support and the bloc is preparing new sanctions against the Belarusian government. Lithuania, which has also seen an influx of migrants in recent months, has also begun deploying more troops along its border with Belarus. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A U.S. federal judge has refused a request by Donald Trump's attorneys to block the release of records surrounding the deadly attack on the Capitol in January. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn has that story.
U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan declined to issue the preliminary injunction that was being sought by Donald Trump's lawyers. Chutkan says it's President Biden who's best positioned to determine whether to waive executive privilege on documents being sought by members of a House investigative committee. President Biden did waive executive privilege last month on documents from the Trump administration.
Mexico's president is calling for the world's wealthiest nations, companies, and people to help the poorest. AP correspondent Mike Gracia reports.
In a scathing address to the United Nations Security Council Tuesday, Mexico's president criticized the world's nations for neglecting the global poor. Andres Manuel López Obrador called for the 1,000 richest people, the 1,000 largest private corporations, and the 20 major economies to generate around $1 trillion annually to improve life for the 750 million people who now exist on less than $2 a day. López Obrador also criticized the world's nations for not addressing corruption in all forms, political, moral, economic, legal, fiscal, and financial. López Obrador was presiding over the council where Mexico serves a two-year term and holds the presidency this month. I'm Mike Gracia.
You're listening to VOA News.
The World Health Organization calls diabetes a major cause of blindness, kidney failure, heart attacks, stroke, and lower limb amputation. This is Rick Pantaleo. Please join Dr. William Cefalu, MD, from the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, and me when we talk about diabetes on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Be sure to listen Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
U.S. President Joe Biden is making a big push to sell his $1 trillion infrastructure plan to the American public. The president says his plan will impact everyone in the United States. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
This legislation is going to change the lives of every American.
The president says the recently passed $1 trillion infrastructure bill will have an effect on nearly every aspect of daily life, especially when it comes to long-neglected transportation issues.
It's the most significant investment in passenger rail in the past 50 years, roads and bridges in the past 70 years. Public transit ever.
Biden also notes that the measure contains billions to build out high-speed broadband internet across the country. It addresses the ports and shipping issues causing the current costly bottlenecks. Biden says he wants Democrats in Congress to act on his even more ambitious Build Back Better program.
There's no one else coming to do this work. It's up to us, our country, our planet, our democracy. They're all in our hands right now.
Tim McGuire, Washington.
International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. As vaccination rates rise in many areas around the world and as countries start to ease strict COVID-19 containment rules, China still enforces a zero-tolerance policy. The strategy includes strict lockdowns, several rounds of mass testing, and centralized quarantine. China's approach came into being weeks after the first major outbreak of the coronavirus in Wuhan. That approach makes it hard for people to travel from one place to another, but authorities in Beijing consider the policy a point of pride. U.S. food banks coping with increased demand from families sidelined by the pandemic are facing a new challenge, surging food prices and supply chain slowdowns. The higher costs and limited availability mean some families are getting smaller servings or using substitutions for staples like peanut butter, which has doubled in price from a year ago. Governments around the world are preparing to express their deep concern over global warming and encouraging each other to end their use of coal, a big energy polluter. That's according to a draft document being circulated at the United Nations climate talks in Glasgow, Scotland. The early version of that document also calls on countries to cut carbon dioxide emissions by about half by the year 2030, even though pledges by governments so far don't come close to reaching that goal. The draft urges countries to speed up phasing out coal and subsidies for fossil fuels. There are currently no references to ending the use of gas or oil in the document. Prosecutors rested their case in the murder trial of Kyle Rittenhouse in the Midwestern city of Kenosha, Wisconsin. Rittenhouse is accused of killing one man and wounding two others during protests over the police shooting of Jacob Blake, a black man. A pathologist testified Rittenhouse shot the first man he killed at close range. Rittenhouse's defense team has begun presenting witnesses. AP correspondent Ed Donahue has more.
Milwaukee County forensic pathologist Dr. Doug Kelly testified one of the two people killed during a night of violence in Kenosha, Joseph Rosenbaum, was shot by Rittenhouse at very close range.
I would say that in this particular instance, we're talking about something within a few feet, within 4 feet or so.
He also pointed out Rosenbaum had soot injuries.
So his hand is in close proximity or in contact with the end of that rifle.
Date from Court TV. Kelly says video does not show if Rosenbaum was grabbing for Rittenhouse's gun or trying to swat it away. Rittenhouse's lawyers suggest he was afraid his gun was going to be taken away and used against him. I'm Ed Donahue.
As legal action stemming from the Astroworld Music Festival appears more likely, some legal experts say Travis Scott's performance history will come under more scrutiny. Eight people died when thousands of fans rushed forward at the concert in the U.S. state of Texas. AP entertainment correspondent Oscar Wells Gabriel has more of the story.
If you've seen a Travis Scott performance, you know it's not the kind of show where you just sit back, chill, and enjoy the music. That could be a problem for Scott in lawsuits that are filed over the Houston tragedy. Legal experts say his history of calling on fans to surge forward and indulge in moshing may work against him in court. Legal experts also say Scott's history with crowds can also pose a problem for the companies that planned and managed the show. Lawyers say payouts on those suits could end up costing hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
The LIGO Virgo Cagra collaboration has released what they are calling the largest data catalog of gravitational wave detections. Gravitational waves travel at the speed of light and are described as ripples in the fabric of space-time. According to a press release from the scientific partnership, the new catalog includes data on 35 gravitational wave detections made at their observatories in the U.S. states of Louisiana and Washington and in Italy during its third and latest observing run from November 2019 to March 2020. 32 of the 35 gravitational wave detections were made by the mergers of various sized black holes. Two are the result of a black hole merging with a neutron star, and one of the events was produced by a black hole merging with either a neutron star or a very light black hole. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam. In Australia, electric car manufacturers are not happy with the government's latest pronouncements on efforts to help the industry. From Sydney, Phil Mercer explains.
The Electric Vehicles Council says an Australian government plan to build electric vehicle charging stations and hydrogen-powered vehicle fueling stations doesn't include subsidies, tax incentives, or minimum fuel standards, and leaves Australia lagging the rest of the world. Transport accounts for one-fifth of Australia's emissions. Prime Minister Scott Morrison says electric and hydro-powered vehicles are key in efforts to decarbonise the economy. There's a plan to build 50,000 home charging stations and increase the government's fleet of electric vehicles. Morrison says it's a bold strategy.
Our plan, which is another key part of the overall national plan to achieve net zero emissions by 2050, this is one of the key building blocks. The future fuels and the take-up of electric vehicles driven by Australians' choices.
The government has forecast that electric and hybrid electric vehicles will make up about a third of annual new car and light truck sales by 2030. Sales hit a record of 8,688 in the first half of this year, but made up a fraction, about 1.5%, of total sales. During the 2019 election campaign, Morrison derided electric cars, insisting they would end the weekend because they wouldn't be able to tow trailers or boats to go camping. His stance has changed as environmental pressures grow on governments around the world. But critics say the Australian strategy lacks ambition and does nothing to improve affordability of electric cars, which are more expensive than gasoline or diesel models. Morrison insists that costs will come down as technologies improve. Opposition Labour leader Anthony Albanese says other countries are leaving Australia behind.
There is this massive shift around the world to electric vehicles. Australia's uptake last year was under 2%. In Norway, it was 70%. In the United Kingdom, it was 15% and rising. We're falling way behind.
Australia has some of the world's highest emissions per person and is a huge exporter of fossil fuels. Despite a pledge to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2050, the Morrison government said its coal and gas industries would not be phased out. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of producer Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington.
Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol approved six more subpoenas targeting top campaign aides to then-President Trump and others involved in the effort to overturn the 2020 election. This and lots more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
The World Health Organization calls diabetes a major cause of blindness, kidney failure, heart attacks, stroke, and lower limb amputation. This is Rick Pantaleo. Please join Dr. William Cefalu, MD, from the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases, and me when we talk about diabetes on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. Be sure